Neurodiversity is all about creating open and collaborative work environments. But how can we achieve this when so many people feel like they can't speak up without fear of negative consequences? I believe the answer lies in our ability, or lack thereof, to foster psychological safety. So in this episode, we're going to take a closer look at how toxic behaviors create an unhealthy workplace and impede progress toward our diversity goals. And I'm going to help you identify the red flags impeding inclusion in your workplace. Hi, I'm Dr. Teresa Haskins, and welcome to Think Differently, the podcast that challenges the status quo and explores the power of neurodiversity to create a more inclusive and accessible world. Together, we will talk about everything from the value of different perspectives to the limitless potential of human beings. We'll explore how embracing differences can lead to endless possibilities and how you can maximize strengths to make a positive impact on the world. So sit back, relax, and join me as we get ready to think differently. Hi, everyone. I'm here to talk to you today about the concept of psychological safety and its critical importance in your diversity and inclusion efforts. You see, I'm often asked two questions. The first is, why do so many diversity and inclusion efforts fail? And the other is, should I disclose my disability to my employer? And while these questions may seem like very separate issues and come from different viewpoints of the employer and the employee, the answer to these questions are the same. It depends. And it depends on the level of psychological safety in your organization. So some of you may be asking, well, what is psychological safety anyway? And what psychological safety is when an individual believes that they can communicate honestly and take interpersonal risks without fear of negative consequences to their self-image, status, or their career. It's a place where people feel safe to voice their opinions, they can share their ideas, and they're willing to take risks without fear of judgment or ridicule. And psychological safety is critical because without it, you can't create a workplace where people trust each other, communicate, and support each other openly. And if you can't talk openly, you won't get the support you need, which means that most employees in these environments are not going to disclose disabilities, let alone request accommodations if they don't have to. And then the lack of diversity cycle and inadequate support in the workplace continues. I'm sure we've all been in situations where we felt like we couldn't speak our minds, couldn't share our ideas, or were afraid to ask for time off, support, or some other sort of workplace accommodation, right? And the truth is a lack of psychological safety at work is not uncommon. And it's a problem that can stem from so many different sources. Sometimes it's the manager. Sometimes it's due to individual interpersonal interaction issues on the team, and sometimes it's a byproduct of the overall company culture. What we do know is that psychological safety is based on trust, respect, and open communication. And if you feel like you'll be ridiculed, ostracized, or penalized because you're different, because you asked a question, or you needed to ask for an exception that deviates from the standard rules, then you lack psychological safety at work. When you lack psychological safety, you can't be yourself. You can't bring your whole self to work because you're always second-guessing, trying to blend in, stay under the radar, and work to stay in alignment with the in-group and norms of the team. And this creates a very stressful, sometimes hostile, and most certainly toxic environment. And let's pause for a moment here. In the environment I'm describing, Success comes from pushing aside individual needs, following the majority, whether you agree with the approach or not. You're not speaking up, and you're working to conform at all costs to the workplace norms and behaviors. I believe a lot of people work this way. And this is problematic if we are also pushing to increase diversity, especially neurodiversity, in the workplace. If your workplace is focused on cultural fit, they figuratively punish or exclude those that work outside the rules, then you're going to have issues when you try to include neurodivergent individuals. Now, I usually take a positive approach when discussing the future state of diversity and inclusion and how we're going to get there. However, if we're going to be candid about achieving inclusion, then we also need to be realistic about the impact of toxic workplace cultures and the lack of psychological safety within them. You will not be able to increase diversity on your team if you lack safety, consistency, and respect. It just can't be done. But you can address these issues on your team. You can ready them to be more inclusive. You can create the space and culture that is ready to accommodate employees' needs, whether or not they have a documented disability. And this is critical because if you have a toxic workplace and then you bring in employees with disabilities and grant them accommodations where others were denied similar requests, it's a breeding ground for disaster. So let's unpack all of this so you can better understand not just what psychological safety is, but more importantly, how to identify where your team has issues and why it's so crucial to address the health of your team before you try to increase the inclusion of neurodiverse individuals at the office. Currently, studies estimate that approximately 30% of working professionals have some sort of disability. Yet the data also shows that only about 4% of disabled people disclose their disability to their employer. This is significant because this tells us that people are afraid to self-identify and asking for accommodations because they know the chance of discrimination is high. And even when companies are making efforts to change these outcomes, to create policies, processes, and routes to accommodation, a lack of psychological safety is often still what's holding everyone back. This is the foundational piece that teams are built upon. All the targeted programs will not help if we do not have teams and managers that treat each other well. And if the majority are already having a hard time being included and don't feel like they have a sense of belonging, how are you going to bring in people with disabilities? How are you going to include someone profoundly different in terms of how they communicate, think, and approach work? So from my perspective, this is a monumental problem. Because when you peel back the layers of diversity and inclusion issues, the problems all begin with leadership and organizational culture. If you have a team that checks all these boxes for psychological safety, and then they lack diversity, then you can begin to unpack the issues of unconscious bias, lack of accessibility, prejudice, and other diversity-aligned issues. And I believe these teams exist, groups that are psychologically safe and yet lack diversity. But from the conversations I have, from a lot of the discourse I read online, to my observations in the workplace, I see that most teams have some deficiency when it comes to psychological safety. And let's be honest, it's risky to be vulnerable. And we're all trying to do what we need to do to survive. And when you are in basic survival mode, you are usually looking out for yourself first, then your family and friends, and others, especially if they're not like you, are last in line. Yet, as a larger community, we know that diversity is the right thing to do, that all humans should have the right to work, to live full lives. And so we work to increase diversity on our teams. But we don't address the underlayers, and we continue to wonder why we can't seem to realize all these amazing benefits research shows diversity can bring. I spend a lot of time educating people on what is autism, what is ADHD, why is neurodiversity so important, how do we create more neuroinclusive workplaces, how can we make our workplaces more accessible. I teach leaders and educators to focus on strengths, be open to new ways of working, and being accepting of communication differences and new approaches. All of this leads to innovation and higher engagement and more productivity. And this is great. It's really great. But yet here we are. So many diversity initiatives are failing, and people are trying to get it right, and they're still stumped. But it's really not that hard to figure out. Well-intentioned and good words don't equal action. A leader's words don't matter if the culture runs counter to our ideals. What we need is not only to change who we include, but people need to be aware of how they act, how they react, and how they apply the rules that impact all aspects of the team, and ultimately our ability to include diverse individuals. Because the problem isn't a lack of inclusion strategies, but rather trying to overcome ingrained human behaviors that result in people competing, creating like-minded groups, and creating divides based on status, power, and control. Now, let's be clear. There are some teams that work well. Not every team is toxic. Some teams may have more opportunities than others. But it's in these blind spots, the unconscious bias, the way we form friends and choose whom we trust as colleagues, whom we include, ultimately whom we exclude, that continue to prevent full diversity and inclusion being realized in our organizations. And I want you to know that I believe that most employees, individually, are good people. If you take them out of the workplace and ask them questions about trust, communication, and support, they will answer in the affirmative. Yes, we care about people. Yes, we want to help others. Yes, we care about others' well-being. But then you flip to the workplace setting, and people seem to change. They compare how they work versus how others work. They worry about who gets the resources, who gets the flexibility, the support, who's getting accommodations. It becomes a competition of value and worth. Who earned it? Who deserves it? Over what do people need to succeed here? It's really something to see when you take a step back. It can be a little hard to swallow, but many people behave counter to their ideals in the workplace on a daily basis. They succumb to the pressure, striving to win, fit in, stay in management's good graces, and do whatever it takes to succeed. So it's clear that we have a problem to address. And this is usually where people start to talk about how to increase psychological safety on your teams, how to increase collaboration and build cultures of respect. These are things I also believe we all want to work on and need to build skills to do. But talking about the solutions will not fix the problems if you do not recognize them in action. So we need to be real and honest with ourselves and be vulnerable and assess what are we doing well and where do we have problem areas to fix? Because most teams have an issue or two to address. And if they genuinely want to be a place where neurodivergent employees can thrive, they're going to need to take an assessment of what's really happening. Because all the accommodations in the world won't matter if the workplace culture and the employee behaviors are toxic. providing accommodations for disabled workers, and not creating supportive workplaces for all can actually make the environment much, much worse. So I think we need to be able to recognize what a lack of psychological safety looks like so that we can address it and become the teams we believe we can be. One of the ways a lack of psychological safety manifests is when teams withhold ideas and feedback from each other. You may have colleagues who have excellent ideas, but are hesitant to share them for fear of being criticized or made fun of. So they stay quiet in staff meetings. Or perhaps they have spoken up before, but were repeatedly shut down. Or maybe you've worked in an environment where you could not ask questions, where errors were blown out of proportion or held against the person and team long after the issue was resolved. Teams that cannot share ideas or provide feedback constructively often demonstrate passive-aggressive behaviors, especially when they have opinions but do not feel they can share them or are unwilling to share them. So they may roll their eyes or snicker when others talk. Instead of constructively talking about issues, they may hint at problems or make snide remarks. They don't clearly express a problem, but will act in ways that result in further tensions. This type of behavior is not only unpleasant and unproductive, but it also can result in confusion and misunderstandings, especially for neurodivergent employees. This type of environment creates unnecessary drama, leads to gossipy behavior, and ultimately can lead to a lack of trust among team members. It's not only unhealthy, it creates an environment that is difficult to navigate successfully. Another factor to watch for on your team is groupthink. This happens when individuals conform to decisions and behaviors of the majority, even when they disagree with it. And they do so simply to fit in and avoid negative feedback and conflict. Groupthink can occur in healthy work environments too, but it becomes toxic if people feel pressure to participate in hobbies, interests, or other values shared by the team and its leaders, even if they're not their own. And when we think about neurodivergence and how it impacts interpersonal communications and how information is processed, we can see why this type of environment would be especially problematic and how all of this leads to a lack of diversity in the workplace, because people who can't fit in will ultimately opt out of that work environment. And if they can't leave, they will begin to disengage, which leads to suboptimum performance. And if people aren't talking, if they aren't sharing information, if they don't feel like they fit in, then you will often find a lack of collaboration too, with employees working in silos or avoiding working with colleagues altogether. And this type of workplace is unhealthy and does nothing to promote teamwork or collaboration. It kills productivity, results in confusion, and puts people at odds with one another. This type of environment is the opposite of what is needed to create diverse organizations, where we can support each other's strengths and offset our weaknesses to create a unified team. With all of this, it's no surprise that a lack of psychological safety leads to high stress and burnout amongst employees. Toxic workplaces that lack psychological safety often have unrealistic expectations of perfection, a normalized view of overtime in the office, fear of making mistakes, seeing the tending to personal needs as having a lack of priorities, and any variance to the norm a sign of weakness. If people do not feel supported, or worse, fear being cast out and ridiculed for taking care of their needs, striving to find balance, or pushing back against unrealistic expectations, why would anyone raise their hands to ask for help, admit a flaw, or request an accommodation? When employees' needs and well-being are ignored, it creates a toxic and under-supported environment. And this issue compounds if there is a perception that some people's needs are prioritized and met more than others. If you have a team that is burned out and lacks psychological safety, where people follow the rules and cannot attend to their own well-being, then they will be less supportive when disabled individuals are provided accommodations that are similar to the types of adjustments they could use to be productive too, but were denied. We need to be mindful that if we're going to increase inclusion and provide accommodations, that we are certain that we are meeting the needs of all of our employees, and not just those who you are legally required to provide reasonable accommodations for. If you provide support only for your disabled employees, while others struggle to manage life in the office, you will breed more resentment and issues in your workplace. This is why increasing diversity isn't just about accommodations for some, but why we need to focus on creating accessible workplaces for all. Because while we all don't need the same supports, we all deserve to have our basic needs met so that we can be successful at work too. And when employees feel supported, they are more willing to support others. I know when I was much younger, I worked in a very toxic workplace. And I can tell you that these types of behaviors erode the spirit and motivation toward work. It's isolating, pits employees against each other, and makes work so much harder than it needs to be. More so, a place with passive-aggressive communications and unwritten rules that lead to failure don't lead to positive outcomes for anyone, especially neurodivergent individuals who need additional support in communications and flexibility and approaches. And all of this brings me back to the questions from the beginning of this episode. Why are diversity efforts failing? And should I disclose my disability to my employer? And I hope you know now that the answer is, it depends. It depends on whether or not the employer's focus on psychological safety and accessibility for all its employees. So now, you are a little better equipped to better identify the types of behaviors and actions that may be red flags to successful neurodivergent inclusion and overall employee well-being. You're going to be better able to ask the right questions and learn how people at the company work, if and how they collaborate, and check to see if there is diversity in thought and approach, or if there is a the way we do things around here mentality, which if you're following along, is a big red flag. The idea of psychological safety feels good, but its absence is horrifying. It makes for toxic and very unhealthy workplaces. So let this idea serve as a notice to all of us to be more mindful of who we are at work, how we treat others within the team, across functions, and know where we could be better partners to others. This type of reflection and awareness is a form of advocacy. It's a critical part of advocacy because you need awareness before you can take decisive action. And when you can be honest with yourself and call out opportunities in how you interact with your team and colleagues, then you will be ready to begin making the changes that create a pathway to inclusive cultures. Thank you for listening to this episode of Think Differently. I hope you found our discussion today insightful and thought-provoking. I want to thank Audio Work Studios for their exceptional production and recording support. Without their expertise and dedication, this podcast would not be possible. If you enjoyed this episode, we encourage you to share it with others. Your support helps us to reach new audiences and promote neurodiversity in our world. Also, be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your favorite platform so that you can stay up to date on the latest episodes. We look forward to seeing you again soon on Think Differently.